Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms.
Hello and welcome to a Retro Open Poly Roundtable Chicken Missile Lines Drop Museum Groocast.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now. And my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know. Will I ever find my way?
This is the traditional giant group podcast that we do every year at Kansas Fest, and this year we are doing it virtually because, of course, Kansas Fest itself is virtual. And over the years, we've expanded this from podcasters to YouTube to now, if you own a microphone, come on in. We want to hear from you. So I'm going to go around the room here and introduce everybody, or they're going to introduce themselves. I am Quinn Dunkey of OpenApple-ish, formerly mostly. It's kind of on hiatus. And currently of the Blondie Hacks YouTube channel, and very, very occasionally of the Retro Computing Roundtable. And to my virtual left is Joe.
Joe Strohsnyder of Joe's Computer Museum on YouTube, where I take apart, fix, and sometimes blow up old computers for my enjoyment and yours.
Next we have Kay.
Hi, I'm Kay Savitz of Antic, the Atari 8-Bit podcast, where I have interviewed more than 400 people who have done things with early microcomputers, and also of the Eaten by a Grew podcast.
And John.
I'm John Lee from the Retro MacCast.
And Charles.
I'm Charles Mangan from How To and other defunct podcasting projects. And hey, I own a microphone.
And Earl.
Hi, I'm Earl Evans with the Retro Computing Roundtable, and I also do another podcast called Next Without Four about programming old computers or old programming languages for computers.
Carrington.
I'm Carrington Vanston from the Eaten by a Grew podcast, where Kay and I are playing all the Infocom games, and I'm also on the Retro Computing Roundtable.
And Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob McMullen from the Player Missile podcast, where I talk about Atari magazines and computer games.
And Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Torrance of the Assembly Lines video podcast, and I'm also in the Kansas Fest committee.
And Kat.
Hi, I'm Kat, and I am the host of the Retro Metal, Old Games and Old Machines Twitch stream, and I'm also on the Kansas Fest committee.
And Ken.
Hi, I'm Ken Gagne, master of the print medium with the magazine Juice GS. In an audio capacity, you can hear me as the co-host of Transporter Lock, the Star Trek review podcast, as well as the host of Polygamer, where I interview diverse voices in the gaming industry and community.
And Paul.
Hello, I'm Paul Hextrom. I am on the Retro Computing Roundtable, and maybe someday again on Drop 3 Inches.
And Blake.
Hello, I'm Blake Patterson. I'm with the Retro Computing Roundtable, and I run the Byte Seller Vintage Computing blog, which I have for quite some time.
Excellent. That is your roundtable for this podcast, and as is tradition, we're going to do an icebreaker game that will no doubt devolve into senseless rambling for an hour or so, and then we label that a podcast and upload it somewhere. So I will hand it off to Charles, who's going to MC this game for us.
All right, thank you, Quinn. If you are familiar with the NPR podcast, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the inspiration for this game is the Bluff the Listener game. So we're going to call this the Bluff the Podcaster or Bluff the Mega Podcast. I don't know. Anyhow, it is a game in which everyone will go around the table, and each of our podcasters will describe a software title for the Apple II. Some of them are real and some of them are fake. And after they read their description, we'll go around and let the crew decide whether what they were reading was a real description or was something that they totally made up. So the example that I gave is you're a yellow dot that's running through a maze and you're being chased by ghosts and sometimes you can eat them.
Fake.
Yeah, totally fake. Never heard. Can't possibly be a game.
Well, obviously that was Pac-Man.
Never heard of it.
But the idea is there are so many software titles for the Apple II. I mean, we keep uncovering new ones that have never been archived before or never cracked or only had limited release. And so some of them are just bizarre and off the wall. If you look at them as an objective observer 40 years later, it's like, were we really supposed to be eating ghosts? And what's the idea behind this big yellow dot eating little yellow dots? And then sometimes he turns super, I don't know what the point is. So anyhow, everyone has their description and I'm going to go by the, random.org randomly generated order list, in my document here. So I will begin with K.
Oh, goodness. So I'm supposed to say the name of the software, yes?
No, keep the name of the software to yourself. Just read the description.
All right. A computer courseware package for grades 7 to 9, this joint endeavor by the Pacific Science Center and the National Pork Producers Council includes Nutrition Sleuth, a hangman-like game, and Grab a Pig, a quiz to review nutrition facts.
All right. Does anyone know, does anyone off the top of your head, do you know for a fact whether that is a real product? Have you heard of that or a fake product? What is, what's the consensus?
I want it to be real.
I'm going to guess that if we know for a fact, then we could only know one thing.
Yeah, that sounds like absolutely like something that somebody would have put together and put in Ziploc bags and sent to teachers.
If you follow 4AM on Twitter, everything is like that, that he cracked now. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the point of the game. There's all kinds of crazy stuff out there.
Somewhere in the Midwest, this game was played.
Okay.
Unless it's fake.
Sounds like something MECC made.
Okay. Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I wouldn't put it past those Midwestern schools to be playing fake games.
That's right.
If you want to do a reaction in Zoom, just a thumbs up if you think it's real. How about that?
8 people think it's real. 8 out of 12.
Okay. Kay, would you like to reveal?
Yes. The software is fake. However, if you change pork to Dairy Council, it's true.
That's how you got me.
That's how you got us. Yeah, that changed one thing.
That's all I got. It was originally called the National Dairy Council Producers Grab a Bite, B-Y-T-E.
That literally, having used to do stuff like that, yeah, that 100% sounds correct.
This game is going to be hard, I can tell.
Yeah.
So that is 8 points for K. Woo. Because he fooled 8 people.
I'm in the lead.
Nice.
Yes. All right, so up next is Paul.
All right. This fortune-telling program can predict what the future has in store for you. You ask a computer a question, it shuffles the 78-card deck. Your own higher self will guide you to press a key when you feel that the time is right to stop shuffling and deal out the cards which should, if you have concentrated hard enough, portray the message to you from your own higher self.
Apple II Tarot. Was that a thing?
I think I'm going to think everything is true.
That's where I'm at. Yeah.
I know. It's like because so much stuff was made for this thing.
I mean, if we're in North Dakota as Carmen Sandiego is real, I feel like everything's on the table.
Yeah, exactly, right? Although, but in the 80s, though, like, I don't know if that's a software, but if it wouldn't be a marketed software title because people weren't as into that back then as they are now.
I don't know. I was reading some stuff in the back of a Byte magazine from 1982 that sounded weirder than that. So,
and there was a lot of those games that were like trying to make them be more interesting than they were by having you do stuff outside the computer, like imagining things before you press a key when it's just a random number generator, but they want to make it into more of a game than it really is by having you do stuff. There was a lot of that.
true.
All right, so ready to vote? So who thinks it's real? Thumbs up.
Six.
So that's one, two, three. Okay, that was six. Thank you, Ken. Yeah, quicker on the draw than me. And Paul?
Okay, this was Programma Software's The Ancient Tarot from 1978. It was real.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, 1978, jeez.
Yeah, I would like to say that there were programs to produce your biorhythm. Mm-hmm. There were like I Ching calculator type things and casting bones, all kinds of stuff.
Now, having invalidated half of the people's entries, Charles moves on to the next person.
I'm sorry. And looks like next on the... Yeah, Carrington. Carrington, oh. You are next.
Okay, so... This was a disc of 10 free Apple II games given away to customers who bought an Apple II from Canadian tire stores in either 1982 or 1983, I think. The software gained some notoriety because the store would offer people either the cassette or floppy disk versions, but the Apple II version only came on floppy, so if you asked for the cassette version, they gave you a VIC-20 cassette instead. Good luck with that.
Was this the same tire store that had its own fake money?
It is yeah. Not had, has.
Has, yeah, no, has. Canadian Tire is amazing.
Still has, yep.
There are places that still accept it.
Mm. Yeah, outside of Canadian
Tire. Canadian
Tire,
yeah. It's not like Canadian Tire currency, practically. Yeah.
Can you trade it in for poutine? That's my question.
You can mine it like a Bitcoin.
I was just about to say.
I want this to be real just because I want Canadian Tire to have trolled people so hard.
Canadian Tire did a lot of weird things. I would not put much past them.
It's only trolling if you do it on purpose.
Yeah.
All right, should we vote?
All right. Yeah. Resident sure, Canadian sure. Believes it. I'm in.
Okay.
She's not a real Canadian.
Hey.
Oh.
I can hear you, right?
You got a microphone. So I see. We're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I counted seven.
Seven?
Yeah, seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You guys are faster than me. It's like my eyes just don't focus as quick anymore. So that was seven votes for real. And Carrington, would you like to reveal your tire store software?
Yeah, totally fake. Canadian Tire never sold the Apple II. They did sell a VIC-20, though, yeah. Something called complimentary cassette. So they could have given you that, but that's the closest they would have gotten.
You got me with the details. Good lie.
I definitely remember.
Details.
I know we came across that cassette once
I was
before.
Hoping people would remember that there was a cassette and it was given away, yeah.
Cool. And looks like next is Quinn.
All right, so what I have for you is a platformer from 1986 in low-res graphics released only in shareware. You played Carson the Bricklayer, and you needed to build a wall up to a certain level, and it got harder as you went up, so the level went up, while aliens from above tried to shoot it apart.
Well, if it's not real, I want it to be.
Mm-hmm. That really sounds like a game, doesn't
it? Yeah, I know, right? That's I'm like that is like the direct opposite of Tetris, and I want it to be real.
Well, Ms. Quinn makes games, so she can come up with a game idea that's totally legit. It's what she does.
The question is, has she published it yet? And is it now available for the Apple II?
She published it in 1986? Yeah. Or was it out in 1987? Oh, there's so many details.
Yeah, there's
you're right about the details, Quinn.
So many details.
Published by a very young Quinn Dunkey.
Oh, God, what if it was?
That would be awesome.
Look at that poker face. Look
would
at her face.
Would she have named her protagonist Carson? I don't think so.
Maybe. Maybe she threw a brick at somebody named Carson once. See if we can make Quinn crack. She can't. She just...
Got it.
All right. So shall we vote?
Let's vote.
I want it to be real.
I want it to be real so bad.
Well, I think only... Four? Only four thumbs
four.
Ups.
Yeah.
I see five.
Four
votes
five.
For real.
Well, there were five.
Mine disappeared.
Five votes for real? Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, they don't stick around very long.
They don't.
These votes.
Right.
Okay, so that was five for real, seven for fake, and that is a... Quinn?
So the title is Bricklayer, yes. But it's fake.
Oh.
I just made up a fake title, too.
All right, so that has got to be your Kansas Fest hack
that's
fest
your
over
hack
for next year.
Next year.
Yeah. It does sound pretty fun, though.
That yeah. would be, yeah, mm-hmm. it's like Tetris from the opposite side.
Yeah, it almost reminded, the description as I was thinking of it almost reminded me of Fix It Felix,
mm-hmm.
where you're climbing up the building and then there's stuff falling down on you from up.
Yeah,
yeah, where my head went
all
was
about that game.
Zookeeper, the arcade game, is where my head was.
Mm-hmm. Love
so
that
I was trying
game.
Trying to build on
Zookeeper's
that.
Zookeeper's a great one.
Yeah.
Oh, well
running
done.
Around in circles. And,
yeah.
All right. So that was Quinn. She got 5 points for that. And Ken, you are next.
In the fantasy story The Lord of the Rings, the party's quest is to rid themselves of a ring. In the 8th worst Apple II game ever, the party's quest is to find a ring.
Some marketing blurb. At least, you know, we're better than 7 others.
8th worst, according to
Google. 8th worst, yeah, right?
There's actually
so
very little detail there. It's the 8th worst game, and you have to find a ring.
And there's
that's
a party
real
trying
vague.
To find a ring.
Lord of the Rings games existed on, like, every platform ever. Like, mm-hmm. that's...
And ripoffs of Lord of the Rings games. Yeah. Real or fake?
Only, all right, two. Looks like two. Two so votes is for real.
Okay. Okay.
People don't trust Ken.
He just has one of those faces. All right, Ken, would you like to reveal your secret?
Could you narrow it down a bit? I have so many.
Well, your 8th worst secret.
This game was published in 1982 by Datamost. It's called The Missing Ring.
Oh,
and Softline readers in 1984 called it the 8th worst Apple II game.
Oh, wow. So it was real. Okay.
So factually true.
Yeah.
For
wow.
10 points for Ken.
Yeah,
well
10
done.
Points.
I
well
was
done.
Shocked when I found out how hated this game was, because I loved it as a kid. There are 9 different party classes. You choose a party of 5, and you move each one separately. So you could even make it a 5-player game if you wanted.
At the time, had you played fewer than 8 games, though?
Well, I don't think I was old enough to have played that many games.
So there you go.
You need to send us a link to that survey. Because I want to see what the other, like, the 7 worst ones
Yeah, I want to see what the, yeah, I want to see what it was better than.
Up next is Kat.
Okay, so, the player is a teenage girl, and you follow a ball of white fluff around the world collecting stuff to beat the end boss.
See, that description sounds a lot like Charles's description of Pac-Man in the sense that it's very abstract, kind of intentionally so.
Which leads me to think it's real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of that. But Ken just fooled me completely as well. So
yeah.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
The funny Ken's thing just... is I swear I've seen that game before, so.
The fluff game?
I don't remember it, but.
Could we hear the description one more time?
Sure. The player is a teenage girl and you follow a ball of white fluff around the world collecting stuff to beat the end boss.
I think you're just describing your childhood.
I mean,
I think I might know it.
Her ball of fluff's just off camera.
The ball of fluff is on the...
We should vote first.
It almost sounds like voting. A boy in his blob, but clearly it's
okay,
not.
Okay, so everybody vote on 1, 2, 3.
9.
So that was 9 real?
Yeah, it was 9 real.
So Blake, you think you know what it is?
I do. Is it droll?
No. It's fake.
It's kind of like
it is a generous description of Magic Knight Rayearth, which was an anime that did.
Oh my gosh!
Basically, an RPG that did have a game made of it, but for like the Sega Saturn.
Well done.
That's nice. A strategy. Yeah. I wish I'd thought of. Do a vague description of a non-Apple II game. That's genius. I sat there and tried to make up a game, which is way harder.
All right. So, Earl is next.
Okay. Well, mine is a hierarchical note taker, which permitted links between notes and color coding for priority, released in 1984.
So a note-taking app with color coding for priority?
And links between different notes.
Okay. Right. Color coding is suspect because Apple II.
Yeah, exactly. Because...
We don't have colors per se.
You could have gray or the other gray.
That's
right. Different shades of green.
You can have blue and magenta.
But Earl also really likes databases, and he'd know about a database.
Yeah, in his wheelhouse.
That was...
Yeah, I feel like this is another one of those just off to the left.
Earl would know this.
But take a look at Earl's poker face. I mean,
I know.
Plus, I think I've been wrong on everyone so far.
Yeah, me too, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been keeping track of how many points you should be losing.
Good.
All of doing amazingly bad.
Oh, I'm doing terrible. And the hyperlinking is suspect because I'm racking my brain how you would even do that on an Apple II.
But again, a 2GS, there was HyperCard.
Maybe a 2GS, yeah.
Oh, are we including 2GS stuff?
84, though.
1984.
Well, I hope so.
84,
that's
2
years before the GS came out.
Yeah, the GS is 86.
Good point.
Yeah, the colors. I'm with Quinn on the colors.
And there's relational databases by then, so...
Okay.
Yeah, lots.
There was, like, Zoom racks.
I was, like, 8 when this stuff was happening.
I mean, there was Profile and PFS and...
Well, it could be in low-res graphics. That could cover it.
All right.
So, ready to vote?
Yeah, I don't like it, though.
3, 2, 1 vote.
Probably wrong.
5.
I see 5 thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Earl, what was the name of that hypertext linking note-taking multicolor program?
So, the name of my fake software was Noteworthy 1.2.
That's really better than 1.1. 1.1 was even more fake. Actually, it was less fake because fakeness is
the desirable
property.
No, I think it got increasingly
property.
Fake.
Yeah, it was increasingly
fake.
Because
it started with the fake software, then it added some fake updates.
It was real. And then it became vaporware. It evaporated.
Oh, well played.
Out of 7 so far, we've only had 2 real. So assuming even distribution... We should have a lot more reels coming up.
I think they were assigned by random.org, so we can't assume
that.
Yeah,
they were assigned randomly. We have no
idea. That is a lot of assumption to make, Ken.
Oh, I'm aware. I also failed probability in college.
If I were being really tricky, I would have told everyone to do a fake one. and then hinted that there was only 1 fake one.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
I made us all vote before you reveal anything.
If I were
a monster.
A sadist. Yeah, if I were a monster. Okay, so next on the list is Joe.
Yes. So, Untitled Goose Game, you say? No, the Apple II had it first, with this equally mysteriously named game. Follow a goofy goose through a maze of puzzles to hone your logic and reasoning skills, and maybe have fun doing it? Rumor is that Warren Robinette worked on this game.
Name dropping. Okay.
All right. Mm. That sounds a lot like what was the company that made Snooper Troopers and those?
Spinnaker. Yeah.
Spinnaker.
I say that 100% sounds like a mech title.
I know there was a game with a goose in it called Gertrude's Secrets.
Gertrude's Secrets. And that was what I was thinking.
Yeah.
There was another Gertrude game, too.
Gertrude's Secrets was what I was thinking too.
There was also a game called Mazes of Rodentia where you were going through a maze to hone your logic skills, but you were a rat, not a goose.
Hmm.
Are we voting? Are we guessing before we vote? Or
I think we're ready to vote.
Gertrude's a couple of those.
I might know.
So vote in 3, 2, 1.
8.
I get 8 as well.
Okay. Joe.
You were amazingly on point. I believe it was Kay who got the name exactly correct. It's Gertrude's Secrets.
Oh!
Nice. Wow.
Yep, that's a bonus point to Kay.
I'm down with the goose info.
Down? Aha. That's why. I don't want a podcast.
That joke was all play, Carrington.
So was Gertrude the goose in the game?
Yes.
Or were you the goose trying to uncover Gertrude's secret?
No, Gertrude the goose is the Learning Company series. I think there's Gertrude's
Learning
Puzzles
company.
And Gertrude's
Secrets. Trying to think of. Yeah, Spinnaker. It was a Learning Company. They did a lot of stuff like that.
I was thinking mixed up Mother Goose or something, but that was like Sierra, right? Wasn't that like a King's Quest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Okay. Up next is Blake.
All right. I am the hero of an Apple II game of old. There are those that have seen me dashing through the night, the full moon glinting off my sword, my purple loincloth but a blur between the trees. I must contend with creatures of all sorts, ants, scorpions, jumpy things, lightning, eyeballs, but at least I have one ally.
Very poetic.
I have a guess. May I make a guess?
We got to vote first.
You and I might have the same guess, Ken.
I also have a guess.
Wait, Kay guessed before we voted last time.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
I'm guessing.
I think you should guess.
Whoever says the name of the title and gets it correct, I'll give you the bonus point. How about that? See, these points are actually worthless.
Everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yes. Yes. Like they're worthless than Canadian Tire dollars. Yes.
So do I say it now or do I say it later?
Ken's going to explode.
Say it now. Say it.
Say it.
Conan, Hall of Alta.
Yeah, Conan. Yes, that's 100% Conan.
A lot of us think it's Conan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
We're all Conan. Should we vote on that?
Yeah, let's vote.
All right, so vote in 3, 2, 1. Joe, you said it was fake. Everyone else said it was real.
But Blake voted.
And Blake voted, okay.
I can't.
He's so convincing himself, yes.
You can lie to yourself.
Was it 9 or 10 then?
It was 14.
I think 9.
Yeah,
I was just messing around.
So it was Joe and who else?
Rob, did you vote?
Oh, yet? I don't have a Linux.
Oh, you used your actual thumb.
Yeah, I don't have. I'm using Linux. I don't have the actual thumb button. They didn't give it to me.
Yeah,
so.
How have you been? Okay.
So maybe we haven't been counting you.
I've been watching Rob for.
All right, we should start over. Mm-hmm. I think.
Okay.
I do not have enough processor cycles to make up another one.
All right, so. Blake, would you like to reveal your secret?
It is indeed Conan Hall of Volta by, what is it, DataSoft, DataEast, DataMost?
Yeah, DataSomething. Yeah. I've streamed it. That's why I'm like, I played this game on stream! Mm-hmm.
So, Ken gets the bonus point for saying it first.
But that was the most poetic description, I think, that Blake...
Yeah, that was the most poetic description of Conan. Bonus.
That wasn't from the back of the box, was it?
I thank you. I'm a poet.
So Blake and I both chose DataMost games. How about that?
There you go. Good stuff.
That was a very impressive game.
It was a great game. Mm-hmm. It really was.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the graphics scroll behind the trees just blew me away.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite Apple II game, actually, for whatever reason. It's pretty simple. You can solve it in like 30 minutes, but...
Oh, yeah. There are plenty of speedruns out there.
Says you.
It's a fun one, though.
Somewhere on my streams, I failed to play that game.
Yes, you can play it start to finish in 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Whether or not you have to start more than once is up to you. Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite games, too. Mm-hmm. It looks like next on the list is Rob.
All right. In this platform game, you're a spider climbing up drain spouts, lattice fences, and garage shelves, depending on the level. You can leave webs between two points and trap small insects. You must collect these insects for food while avoiding predators like birds and lizards.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly how I feel.
Everyone else is apple cider spider. But...
It sounds cool. I remember.
Can you read that one more time? I missed the beginning.
Oh, sure. In this platform game, you're a spider climbing up drain spouts, lattice fences, and garage shelves, depending on the level. You can leave webs between two points and trap small insects. You must collect these insects for food while avoiding predators like birds and lizards.
Any guesses as to what it might be?
I think I might know.
It. Go ahead.
I would guess apple cider spider.
Never heard of that.
Didn't you hear me say it like 3 seconds ago? But I don't think that's it, because there's no...
I would also have guessed
that. That's a platformer, but there are drain pipes and stuff in that?
It sounds like Dynawave with different sprites.
I don't know
it
very well.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I just think he had a hacked version of Centipede.
Because that one takes place in a like a factory type thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's been
forever since I played that.
I played it a couple weeks ago. I'm going alphabetically through Total Replay.
Maybe a bird got into the factory or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, if it's fake, I'm going to make this because it sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, you guys ready to vote? Okay. In 3, 2, 1.
Re-real, I count.
I see 3.
Ken is trolling the process.
Just 2?
Once again.
For those listening at home, Ken is holding up a thumb.
I counted 3.
Is that only 2?
But it's not his.
So I saw three. Rob, would you like to tell us what the title of this game is?
Oh, this fake game? This is like my third attempt at trying to create a fake enough game, and that this is the one that I thought I would actually like to play if it
it sounds existed. Great. You should make that.
Next K-Fest. Hackfest.
Now, is there a arcade game or an Apple II game where you do play a spider?
It sounds like an arcade game to me, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Black Widow, of course.
Apple Cider Spider.
Apple Cider Spider.
The one people thought it was. Would be the one.
There are spiders in Dino Eggs, but you're not a spider.
But you don't play as the spider.
You can evolve into one.
But are there dinos in spider eggs?
Oh, yeah.
That's the question, I guess.
It's like a mashup of spider eggs, dino eggs, and Hard Hat Mac.
But this sort of mechanic of creating a web sort of in a Kix-like environment where you're capturing things and stuff, it sounds... this could also, be a really good game, actually.
Yeah, it sounds great.
I was also thinking of the laser spider game where you have to, like, you have, like, the spirograph thing on either corner and you have to stay on the webs and, like, shoot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is there a link to a Kickstarter for this?
Yeah, I do hope someone's taking notes on all these great game ideas. Some of these are
We've just become Shark Tank.
I have those notes.
We'll invest in yours.
You have funding.
I feel like if you try to make mine, you're going to run into problems.
All right, up next is Chris.
In this low-res graphics game, you are a cute little pink pig. Little do you know, your tail is on fire, and you're stuck in a burning building. Do you try to escape? Or pick up the cans of gasoline and cause more mayhem.
Brought to you by the National Pork Council.
Brought to you by Warner Brothers.
It's a good thing the Apple II doesn't have sound, because that would be horrifying.
8-bit pig squeals.
Game's name is Sizzler.
Sounds like an Atari 2600 game, actually.
It does. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Oink. Yep. Yeah, there was an Activision game called Oink.
I remember that.
Yeah. And there was some pretty grim stuff towards the end there in the bargain bins.
Oh, yeah, that could totally be a port of Oink.
All right, so any guesses?
It does not ring a bell for me at all.
Nope.
But I think Oink was laying bricks, not having your tail on fire.
I think you're mistaking that for...
Bricklayer.
The Bricklayer.
Yeah. Classic Carson the Bricklayer.
Yeah, it's Carson the Bricklayer.
Classic fake Apple II game.
I'm at the point now, though, that if it doesn't at all ring a bell, I think it's got to be real.
I'm
being fake.
Yeah. Maybe it's a current game using the low-res sprite library.
I think Creon is the only pig game I've ever played.
Well, and as soon as you say low-res, you open up like shareware volumes that go on and on, which is the whole reason I did it.
Now, what if it were double low res?
Or double low res.
Then Dig and Brock wrote it.
And, yeah, exactly. Tap to flap.
You guys haven't played the diabolical Dr. Dracupig? That was a game.
All right, so any guesses as to the title? Or do you just ready to vote? All right,
no,
so everybody ready to
fiery
vote?
Fiery pig.
Hooyan.
Iron pig, I like it.
All right, so 1, 2, 3, and vote.
Too real.
Carrington going out on a limb.
Okay, so I am
just staying out on the limb.
I see two thumbs. And Chris?
All right. That game was Firebug, and it was written by Silas Warner, who also wrote Castle Wolfenstein. Castle Wolfenstein.
Wow.
What?
Wow, so windy on my limb now.
What?
I did not know about the pig aspect of this.
Yeah, I didn't know there was a pig in that game.
The whole main character. You are a pig, and you have a little like red snout and everything.
How do you render the pig though? What's the color? What's the color scheme there?
Pinkish, whatever.
Yeah, pink, right?
Orange. Magenta? Like, I guess there was that.
There's pink in low res.
Oh, low res. Right?
Yeah, 15. Yeah, low res you had 15 colors.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
oh, this was actually somewhat like of a controversial game too. I think he talked a little bit about this in his like 1992 Kansas Fest talk.
Yeah, he actually was some city in Michigan that actually banned it because they thought it encouraged arson.
Wow!
My pig.
All right. Video games cause violence.
I like to think he was going, now that I have this sweet Castle Wolfenstein money, I'm going to do the game I really wanted to make.
This is my auteur project. Yeah.
This needs to be added to Total Replay, the next release.
Yeah. Tell 4 a.m. in Cucumba.
I don't know. Are there any low-res games on Total Replay?
I don't think so.
Total Replay. Yeah. Flapplebird is, I think Flapplebird is on there.
Yeah.
Blockchain is on there.
Oh, that's right.
Blockchain is in there. Mm-hmm. So at least two. I'm only in the M's.
Mm-hmm. Actual commercial low-res games were very rare. Like, there can't have been more than a few.
I think Muse had a couple, though. I mean, like, I think 3 Mile Island, wasn't that one?
Yeah, Lemonade Stand.
I missed that one.
Yeah, 3 Mile Island, maybe, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, when Silas Warner was asked about Firebug in the 1992 Kansas Fest talk, he segued into talking about 3 Mile Island. He didn't talk about Firebug at all.
Is Three Mile Island a sequel to Firebug? In a way,
that's right.
Yeah. Like, that's right. From 3 Mile. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, people from the. Yeah.
This just keeps getting darker.
Yeah.
All right. So, last but not least, we have John Leake. Is anyone else not gone? Everyone else is gone.
No, okay, that's
so
everybody.
We've got John for wrapping it up.
All right. Well, Paul, if you thought the last title was controversial, what about a remake of Frogger? But instead of a frog, you've got a baby. And the baby's got to cross a string of fireballs, a water hazard, and a highway. And every time that you lose a life, it's kind of graphically demonstrated. What would you think of that game, Paul?
Me?
You
specifically. Forget the rest of you guys. This was an Apple IIgs game.
Are we allowed to guess at the titles now?
Yeah, I want to guess too.
I think this is Senseless Violence.
Yep.
Yes. Do you know the rest of the title?
No.
Survival of the Fetus.
Oh my god.
No.
It does sort of seem like
I shouldn't have said that yet.
It's true. Vote.
I vote real.
Everyone
vote.
I don't think it's real.
No, I want this to be some sort of bizarre homebrew.
I mean, everything for the Apple II was homebrew.
Yeah, I mean,
it was shareware.
Like,
by the
really homebrew.
Xenocide.
Like, you had to know the right person on the right BBS to get it.
Pangea Software did this.
Yeah.
Looking it up, I see it was Silas Warner's last game.
The Mac.
Pangea did this?
That is amazing.
Yeah, in the early days, they were doing weird things.
And actually, the graphics are very good.
Yeah,
it is. It's
I don't think I'll be streaming
game.
That.
Yeah.
And there's a sequel, too.
Yeah, there's a Senseless Violence, too.
Yeah. You Use, You Die is what it's called. I haven't actually played that
one. Oh, it was about drugs. They also did Copy Killers, which was like Pac-Man against copy protection.
Oh, there you go. Yes.
Wow. Or pirates. Yeah.
I am going to have to download this tonight. Yeah. We'll see.
Another one for Total Replay.
Total, don't play.
I don't think there's any GS games on Total Replay.
Now, if there is a, if we're gonna get Pangea, if you've never played Xenocide,
Xenocide is
that
great.
Is a good one. Really good. Yes.
Yay. And they did a, what was the name of their vertical shooter on the 2GS?
Vertical.
It was so good.
A bullet, like a bullet.
Orbit Zone? No, not Orbit Zone.
Yeah, it's like a vertical bullet hell shooter. That's gonna bug me now.
Firefall.
It's one of the best games on the 2GS.
Okay.
Let me know what it is, because that is something I would be interested in failing at playing.
I will Google this.
Was it Orbit Zone or Quadranome? Cosmocade?
Cosmocade.
I'll have to look for that one.
Yeah, I'll look for that one.
Oh, bonus point to Ken. So who gets the bonus point for Senseless Violence? Because a couple
Quinn.
People said it.
I believe.
Quinn.
Okay.
I think got it first.
Yay.
Yeah, I think I had a sort of like a psychological analysis of that went that this had to be real because he wouldn't make that up.
Yeah, you're right.
You mean
exactly.
You're not wrong.
John is too nice.
You're not wrong.
You've got to have quite the fastball to pitch a 2GS game past Quinn, though.
Mm-hmm. All right, so totaling up the scores now, we have, there with the bonus points. All right,
everybody got 9.
Yeah, well, Chris gets 9 points with Firebug, because nobody believed that a pig running around was setting things on fire with gasoline cans. Kay also gets 9 points with his rendition of an educational game about, oddly enough, the Port Council. And Kat also coming in with 9 points for her. What was the name of the anime?
Magic Knight Rayearth.
Magic Knight Ray Earth title. But Ken, of course, pulling it out in the end with 10 points with his bonus point for not being able to convince anyone that the missing ring was really the eighth worst title ever made for the Apple II. So Ken gets 9 points plus the bonus point, so he gets 10.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay.
And now I'm closing that Google Doc and never will speak of it again.
So I have to jump in here because our listeners are screaming at their players right now. So it was not Cosmocade. That was a different game. That's actually a pair of games. So maybe it is one of the two. See, the problem is that what is the Apple IIgs is down right now.
Yeah.
So Googling anything about the 2GS when that site is down is impossible.
Yeah. You have to go through the Internet Archive to get to their site right now. Hopefully everything's okay.
Did Kansas Fest like DDoS? What is the Apple IIgs?
No. It's been down for at least a week and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I have a screenshot here of the game I'm talking about, but it's in the Google image thumbnails, and so I can't tell what the name of the game is. But yeah, I think it's part of the Cosmocade, so it's either Naxos or Calibus, one of those two games. But anyway.
And this was also Ambrosia?
Pangea.
Pangea?
Pangea, I think.
Oh, Pangea. Sorry.
Pangea.
Yeah, Ambrosia was a Mac publisher. Yes.
Somehow I get them confused. They were sort of similar in their types of software.
Pangea did a lot of like 3D stuff.
Yeah, Orb Zone.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a weird one. Bugdom. Okay, well, I mean, they list all the GS games here. Has anyone looked at the wiki? There's only 8. It's not Cosmocade, though. Quadrinome?
Well,
so you said it was a top-down?
It's a top-down vertical shooter.
Grackle?
Mm-hmm. No, that's about seagulls.
I think it's Journey to Calibus.
Oh, I know what it is. Xenocide is like the alien.
Yeah, that was the first-person shooter.
Yeah.
That was their only commercial product for the Apple IIgs, I think.
Yeah.
All the rest were shareware.
Somebody did an FPS on the GS.
Well, no. It's got part of it's kind of platformery. So part of it's the first part is kind of you're driving down a road and aliens are splatting on your windshield.
Yeah, it's sort of space harrier style. Okay. Like it's a first person shooter, but it's like 2D scaling sprites. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
That was Xenocide, but the one the vertical shooter I'm thinking of is different.
I don't know.
I think she's trolling us with a fake game. She's still playing.
Gwen, the game's over.
Meta game for Gwen.
Main character name was Carson.
The aliens were all fiery pigs.
All right.
Amazing.
So what does everybody think of the Bluff the Podcaster?
This was super fun.
Enjoyable.
Yeah, it was cool.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My gosh. This was super fun. It's excellent.
I took a risk by stealing an established property and making it my
doing
own.
It with us.
Oh no, I've seen other like variety podcast type shows do this game with great success also.
I think the risk was trusting us to do homework ahead of time.
Yeah.
That was the real risk.
So the reason why I came up with Magic Knight Ray Earth is because the white ball of fluff is named Makona, and I have a plush of it sitting on the bed over here, and I was looking around my office like, oh, I can't think of anything. I'm going to use this.
I did the same thing for Gertrude's Secrets. I just happened to have a copy of it up here. I'm like, that'll work.
Okay, so just so that our listeners can finally sleep tonight, I found it on YouTube. So yes, it is part of Cosmocade, the Arcade of Tomorrow, released in 1990 by Pangea, and it is called Journey to Calibus. The Cosmocade package had 2 games in it, and the vertical shooter was Journey to Calibus.
So, what was the other one?
The other one is Naxos. I forget. I think that was the side-scrolling platformer where you're in a spacesuit or something. I don't know. I don't remember that one, but Calibus was excellent.
I totally missed this one.
The side-scrolling, that's the second part of Xenophobe.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. The second Xenocide, part of Xenocide. Sorry. Yeah, we've got.
I've never seen this.
You've got the air meter and stuff.
Mm-hmm, air meter. Yeah, so much
anyway,
fun.
Anyway, Journey to Calibus, Cosmocade, strong recommend for 2GS folks.
Good to know.
Oh no, I'm totally like making mental notes of all this stuff to for the stream. Yeah.
Well, a couple of these are going to be Hackfest entries next year.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Like, I definitely want to do the Bullet Hell on stream. I think those people like to watch. People like to watch those.
Yeah, it's a great game. It's a lot of fun. The music is awesome.
Gotta try out that fetus game.
We do try to keep it friendly on my channel.
Try saying that to your partner.
Just gotta watch out for the pigs that are on fire.
Hey, honey, wanna play the fetus game?
To be fair, I haven't played it in 30 years, but I have a distinct memory that Senseless Violence was not a good game. Like, it was, it had the shock value, so the teenagers loved it, but it wasn't actually a very good game.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of that going around.
But that spider game, that needs to become a thing, right? Somebody's got to do that. That was a great idea.
I'll work on that for next year.
I'm already designing Carson the Bricklayer in my head. Just to prevent awkward silence, as is tradition, I will jump in and MC the remainder of the show. Pro tip, you can get Quinn to do anything with awkward silence. So, let's do the traditional, what is everyone's favorite part of K-Fest this year, which is kind of an interesting question, being that it's virtual. Don't say the people, Carrington.
I love the people.
The avatars.
The pigs.
I guess speaking as one of the organizers, the fact that it came off as spectacularly as it did with very few technical hiccups that we had. Like, I think we were all losing sleep over how this was going to come off, and it came off brilliantly.
Yeah. It was seriously better than it had any right to be.
Yeah, like, really.
Remarkably good.
Thank you, question mark?
It was better than a lot of virtual conferences with 10x the budget.
Definitely.
It's not easy to do something big and virtual. And hats off to the KFS committee.
And for the first time, it's not like we've been warming up to, it was a small thing with a dozen people around Skype, last year, and then, it's ramping up and ramping up. No, it was suddenly 500 people on a Discord server, on a Zoom webinar, all this new technology that a lot of the presenters, I don't think, had interacted with until, they had to. It was great. There was no technology barrier between you and the people that were presenting. So I felt like it was an astonishing achievement.
Yes, and a surprising benefit for me was, first of all, the attendance. I mean, because it was virtual, so many more people were able to attend. So there was just hundreds and hundreds of people, and a lot of people who would never come to the real one. John Carmack was here, which was crazy. Like, John Carmack was just kicking around in the Discord talking to people. That happened.
Yeah, no, it's true, though, that I really didn't quite know what it was going to be like. We sort of tried to set it up, but I mean, like, I just didn't know how it was going to go. And I think it went super smoothly and was a lot of fun. And, and it's over too soon, just like the real one.
Does Discord have a way of, like, showing a map of, like, where in the world everyone's connecting from? I would love to have seen that.
No, Discord doesn't do that.
That would be kind of cool.
It'd be cool, but it's... That's something like you could theoretically like write a bot to do like you would in an IRC channel. I was in an IRC channel where we had that one time. Like it mapped everybody on Google Maps. There was a command that you would put in with like your city and state or your country or whatever.
Ah, got it.
So theoretically you could probably write a bot to do it, but I don't think it's baked into Discord.
One of the things that I thought was really cool was the number of kind of first timers who were just astounded at the depth of the talks. And I saw so many people who were like, I can't believe people are doing this, on Apple II. And my reaction was, actually, every Kansas Fest is like that, right? If you just come to them, every year is like these astounding things. And for them, it was like this brand new revelation. So that was cool.
Yeah,
I was actually, this is my first, I had never actually, I keep meaning to attend like for the past 10 years, and eventually I will, hopefully next year, in person. But yeah, it seemed like things got a lot more into the weeds as far as, technical details, and, like I would be listening to something, walk upstairs, get coffee, come back, and then you're looking at like assembly listings of what was just being talked about. But yeah, it was really, I'm sure if it's a week long and you're there in person, you get a little more, more of a grip around things. But I thought it was quite impressive being a first, first time, but there was no point, where it was, at all dull or, things that I didn't really think, okay, well, this is not really my cup of tea, but still, like, it turned out to be interesting, this or that talk. So I don't know if I'm the only one that hasn't been here before, probably.
Yeah, I think in this
group, I think you might actually be.
Yeah, actually.
Welcome to K-Fest.
Yeah.
Yep. It will be interesting to see if attendance next year is higher because of this. Like, this was sort of like a free trial K-Fest. Like,
I'm a little afraid, actually.
I know. The reality of the dorm and the food. Yeah, like,
we have only so much space.
And the food this year was amazing.
Yeah. That's right. The showers were really awesome.
I know, my bed.
My suggestion for the board, for the board members that are listening, is that you continue to do the virtual K-Fest in parallel to the in-person K-Fest, because
during all your free time.
Yeah. What, you mean like every 6 months?
I don't think any of us have a processor cycle for about a week.
Right. But I mean, you already do the streaming. You know, that would just be basically just throw the Discord up there so people who are, yeah.
The streaming.
And so you have 100 people on site, and then you have like 300 people that couldn't make it on site, but they're able to interact virtually.
And you charge them for admission?
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Like $20 access to the Discord would be great. Mm-hmm. Like, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would really help.
You get the back channel for $20, and then you can watch the, you know, or if you don't want to, then you can watch the stream on YouTube and download the videos later. But if you want to interact live and have at least the virtual experience, then it's $20 and
that's a better idea than the one I had. I was thinking along the terms of events like MAGFest or Awesome Games Done Quick, where they do it twice a year. And you could do like a 1 day virtual Kansas Fest in February and then do a full on site Kansas Fest in July.
Ken. Somebody mute Ken.
Did I not just say I prefer Charles' idea? Come on.
Do not put that into the universe.
Yeah. The Discord has been really kind of good, though. I mean, like, it's
the Discord worked very well.
Mm-hmm. I think the only I believe that it will last on. I mean, that the only thing that I'm hesitant about trying to lock it for next year is that I think it's the new Facebook group or whatever. You know, like I think it's the place where everyone's going to be. So I don't know that we can ever lock it down again.
Right. Although the question, I guess, is does somebody have to moderate it, right? Or can it
And that's going to be the thing.
Eventually moderating.
We're going to need people to keep an eye on it and moderate it.
But then one thing, like Ken, I'm on, I'm probably on 18, 20 Discords and the different ones. I mean, some are more, cleanly handled. Others are maybe just one or two are kind of a hot mess. But the people in the community, I mean, after You point out somebody, these guys are prominent, they can be moderators, and then they'll provide moderating to other people. It seems like that might safely be able to happen without, like, an organizational, tight management of it. But it seems to work in most of the Discords that I hang out with, and these are pretty loose groups of people with lots of attendance.
Well, so behind the scenes, have there been that? Many problems on the Discord this time around?
There were nothing major. There were a couple minor things. But you can easily imagine that you just let it be totally freeform. Mm-hmm. That things could crop up.
Yeah. Got it.
I don't think I've ever seen a community that doesn't require moderation sooner or later.
Right.
And but even the smallest charge is very effective at weeding out people. Like, people aren't going to pay $20 to go into a Discord and troll it. So that could be really effective.
We might want to sever this from K-Fest, and then it could be there's just the community.
And I think the advantage to having it tied to K-Fest is that the Kansas Fest Committee is a 501c3 or whatever, as an organization, can be responsible for whatever it requires.
It's worth noting that the Discord worked much better than the Slack channel that we tried a couple years ago. That kind of fizzled. Like, I guess it's still there. I don't know.
Yeah, it exists.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
It didn't seem to get the momentum. Like, the Discord just blew up. Like, it's just full of people everywhere.
Yeah, well, and I think that's just because that's the only option. I'm a little worried about trying to, like, I like the idea of people being able to participate next year from remote locations, but I'm a little I'm not sure how that's going to work, because I think once you can actually walk around and go check out what's in people's rooms and stuff like that, it's no one's going to pay attention to the Discord except
and
the people in the
I'm
Discord.
And that's what I'm thinking. I think that's what happened with the Slack. I was thinking about this actually last night. That was the problem with the Slack. And since somebody said, you know, I feel bad about you post to the Slack, you post to the email list that I need to go to Walmart or whatever, and people don't see it because everybody's in front of their computers the entire time for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody's pretty unplugged when you're there, which is part of the appeal.
So last year when I got home from K-Fest, I had, like, I didn't check my Destiny Clan's Discord for, like, the entire week. I just, like, marked the whole thing as red, and it was a complete wash.
Yeah,
and
with regard to the streaming, I think there's a challenge there. Like, if we offer a virtual option that's like $20 streaming, the streaming is kind of by the skin of our teeth every year at the real K-Fest. Like, it barely works because, like, Jason Scott or someone else is willing to kill themselves trying to make it work and running Ethernet cables to the basement and craziness. So you don't really want to set yourself up to guarantee that to people because they've paid $20 for it, you know? Like, it's a nice gravy on top of real K-Fest, but it's hard to commit to that.
This was definitely a fair amount of work, right? As much work as a regular Kansas Fest, but maybe just a little bit more compressed. And so I don't think we would even want to do, like, the webinar version of, you know.
Well, and just the infrastructure at Rockhurst just has historically not been good enough to offer that service. Like, their internet is terrible. Mm-hmm. And it goes down constantly, and yeah, the sheer power of Jason Scott is required to keep it running at all.
I think Jason was actually suggesting, like, bringing in a mobile, like a hotspot on a truck or whatever to help with the.
Yeah, they call those they call them cows. To sell on wheels.
In Canada, we call them fiery pigs.
Fiery pigs.
Aside from the whole Discord thing, I found this experience last 2 days bittersweet. It was better than no K-Fest, but I couldn't walk up to my friends and give them a hug and hang out with them in real, you know, in the dorm room and have hour-long conversations. And
yeah, after missing last year's, I was really looking forward to getting to see everyone in person this year. So this is pretty darn nice. Just being able to see everyone has been pretty awesome, and hanging out in the one of the video rooms on Discord last night was pretty cool. But it's the La Croix of
that's a good metaphor. Yeah. I like that. The deep water. It's like, well, it's okay, I guess.
Yeah, I gotta say, when the Zoom shut off tonight at the end of the webinar, and it started, and just, you know, everybody just started disappearing out of the presenter list, I started to get kind of misty. I was like, I'm not going to maybe see some of these people for a year. And then I was getting sad.
Yeah, it was sad when Peter was like, well, I guess that's it. click.
No, you got to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, it didn't have the wind down that you get with real K-Fest, everybody packing up. And
there's that closure
that you get.
Well,
then I have a
14-hour
drive home.
Yeah, so, closure, yeah. Go sit in your car in the garage for 14 hours. I guess.
With a lot of events, I think people worry that if you open it up to the general public come virtually for just $20, then the event won't be sustainable because everyone will do that. But anybody who's gone to Kansas Fest knows it is not remotely the same. I mean, it's great to have access, because if you couldn't go or whatever, then you get to have this. But Kay's right. Like, it's not the same as actually being there. Once you have a taste of being there, there's no substitute.
We had that exact same concern when we started streaming the event. Why would anybody come if they can just watch it live in real time on video from home? And what ended up happening was people would watch the videos from home and say, I want to go to that. And attendance went up.
Exhibit A.
And it's less scary because you've seen some of the people.
I think my guess is that probably a better strategy is just to stream it, not try to charge for it, and just, you know, do what we've done before. You know.
Yeah, it seems to be working. One interesting thing about the virtual version of this, I was talking to a fellow K-Fester and good friend, and I'll keep his name out of it just in case, but he was saying, so he's one of those people who the sessions are not what this is about for him. He just sits in the lobby for the entire week. You know, and people come through and you talk to people and you work on projects all night or whatever. So this was sort of like, if you're not a sessions person, this was a very different and possibly lesser experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that this Kansas Fest was not about how well things were done compared to being there. It was about what was missing. Like, the session aspect, as Quinn just pointed out, in my experience this year, was one-to-one with being on site. You know, I don't feel like anything was missing from the session, the scheduled component of Kansas Fest. It was everything else that was missing that I really felt.
Going out to dinner, hanging out with friends, playing the
games.
Going
to buy postcards.
Mm-hmm. And getting frozen yogurt.
That's right.
The smell.
we said that in one of the video chats the other night. We need candles that smell like isopropyl alcohol and Mika caps.
And I believe somebody was mentioning, you have to make sure to go take a very cold shower early in the morning just to get the full effect. Yes.
Should make one salad
with somebody
in the middle
watching
of the week
you.
And then just eat it.
Yeah, I left my oven open the whole time just to get the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
I should have left my soldering iron on just for the fumes.
Yeah.
For that ambiance. So speaking of the sessions, what was everybody's favorite session this year?
Misty Make.
That's good.
That's high up on my list.
Yeah, it's really high up on my list.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Because I should stream this.
I mean, I'd already read all about it and just, yes, and I was still impressed.
Mm-hmm. Reading about it and seeing it were two very different things.
That's kind of an OS and user interface nerd. I kind of like the A2 OSX presentation.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that thing is cool.
That was cool. I think the one by Tomas, the Apple II emulator, that was...
That
was amazing.
That was slickly produced.
Yeah.
So that was so that one was the Steve II emulator, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Not to be confused with the online 8-Bit Workshop, which was also pretty impressive.
I was about to call that one out, 8-Bit Workshop. That one kind of came out of nowhere for me, and that was really impressive. I love that where you think the emulator problem is solved, and then someone comes along and just... has a totally fresh take on it. Like it was a few years ago when someone had the emulator where you could rewind time.
Oh, yeah.
And that just blew everybody's minds. Like how in 30 years of writing emulators has nobody done that yet? And it was such a good idea. I think he never finished that. But
that was Tom, right? Yeah. With the IE.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, your table reads, those were both so funny.
Glad you enjoyed them. The challenge there was without being able to hear audience laughter, it's like playing in an empty room. I really had no idea if they were working or not.
The aspect of that is very difficult.
Presenting on Zoom is very tough. It really is.
The Nox Archaist one just keeps me excited. Got me excited, and they've just sustained excitement for so long. I cannot wait to play that.
I think your name is in the credits, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I saw it.
For kickstarting
Even when Apple II games were coming out new, I was not as excited about seeing a new Apple II game as I am about all the updates to Nox Archaist.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't play many RPGs when I was playing stuff. It was maybe Bard's Tale was one of my entries into that. But it's like, I mean, just the graphics on it, the performance on it, and it's like they're getting all of this out of just a standard machine. They're not like requiring 8 megs of RAM and all this stuff. So amazing.
But as Quinn pointed out during the session chat, what's amazing is to see this like 8-bit period accurate game that has modern gaming things. Like it starts off with tutorials.
Yes.
So it's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, the modern design sensibility of it, I love. Like it's a soft start. It's approachable. You know, it's 3 clicks to gameplay. Like it's the kinds of things that we do in modern game design, and it's all in there. And, you know, the push-pull tutorials, like it's really nicely designed. And I have
the microtransactions I could do without.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm waiting for it to pop up and say, would you like to skip this fight?
Yes.
If so, let us mine Bitcoin.
the rewarded video, is a little much. I have a confession to make. I'm a very bad Apple II community person. I had not yet purchased Nox Archaist. So literally in the middle of this year's presentation, I pre-ordered the collector's edition. I think it was actually, Chris, when you were showing the manual. I think that was the straw that broke my bad Apple II owner's back. That manual looks so nice.
Very nice. Yes.
You did a very bad job of hiding the cover.
No, I think I showed it like twice.
Yep.
Mark's gonna kill me.
No. It was like that little secret reveal. Oh, I shouldn't have shown you.
Oops. I want that cloth map.
The team, you almost lost me when you revealed that Burger Becky is doing a 2GS version, because I almost want to wait for that. But I'm not going to. But
why wait? Get both.
Exactly.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I'll get both.
Joe, you nailed it.
Yeah.
Another session that came out of nowhere for me, but I'm actually really interested in was Selim Abraham's one, the Greasy Graphics mm-hmm. Library, mm-hmm. Low-res sprite work that looks really approachable if you want to knock out a low-res game, and now you've got sprites. It's like, take that, Atari people. Yeah. We've got it too. Bring it.
I really enjoyed hearing about that one. Low-res was the first entry point for me in the Apple II world, and I've always loved low-res graphics. I remember I went to a computer store, this was late 70s, and they had this great low-res game on display, and I don't remember much about it other than it was just really visually appealing. And so I went back and programmed some low-res graphics, and that sprite and background library looked like it would really come in handy.
Yeah, and he's a great example of someone who might not have made it to a real K-Fest, but he was here, and he had all these interesting new ideas. His Hackfest entry was fantastic. Like, mm-hmm. he's the kind of guy who you would think you'd heard a lot from in the community, but, you know, now we get to, you know, interact with all these new people because of the virtual nature of this year.
Good point.
Yeah, I was just looking through the session list to try to think of what to talk about, and, like, there wasn't a bad one. Mm-hmm. So I can't eliminate any from that.
They were all, everybody did a fantastic job.
You know, that goofy guy that did those, you know, those lights that go in the Apple II, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Joe, I have to say, you're an awesome presenter. I mean, I like your YouTube channel, but yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Sort of.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing all the clear cases that everybody is getting this year once the clear cases actually get out to get in people's hands.
Absolutely.
And what people are tricking them out to.
Mm-hmm. I bought one of your, the light to your, above your right shoulder, the Apple, while you were presenting it. I actually got online
Thank
and
you.
Did that, so that'll be cool to put together. And I'll say while I'm talking, I thought that another one I really liked was the Out of This World, Another World.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, Burger Becky.
Oh, yeah, Becky has piece. The best stories.
Well, especially
yeah,
good, since great it, stories. the performance is so good on it, you know, given, you know, the GS's limitations. And I thought it was particularly interesting that film mode wasn't used. Like, that was one of the examples. I remember being aware of that. I've done blog posts about the film mode. It's like, oh, well, you know, here it enabled this, but no, she didn't use this. So, and she told why. So that was interesting.
Yeah, film mode is very interesting. I mean, as a sort of recent 2GS game programmer, I also fell into the siren song of it. And yeah, I'm sure they had in mind polygons when they implemented it. But it seems like such a good idea, and like every 2GS programmer tries to use it for something, and then you get into the details of it, and it just doesn't. It never ends up being worth it, and such a funny thing.
It's the only hardware acceleration to the GS's graphics chip, I believe. I think it's the only thing it does that helps you.
Exactly right.
You know,
yeah,
that's it.
I like Ivan's tale of telling the finishing the game that has been playing for 36 years.
Time. Wow,
that was amazing.
Yeah. Game that came on 128 floppy disks or something like that.
And I hope that Becky's Out of This World implementation is covered on, I don't know if anybody reads Fabian's Landguard, I think is his name. I'm sure I'm butchering that, but he's got a blog, a very technical blog. He covers game engines. So he's done, gritty breakdowns of Doom and various other engines. And he did a great series about all of the ports of Out of This World or Another World, and all of the implementation details of each one, because it's implemented completely differently on every platform to get around the various limitations of each platform. And he's covered every port except Becky's. So I'm really hoping that that he corrects that. Apparently, he did reach out to her, and she sent him everything for him to write his article, and then he never did. So I don't know what's going on there. But if you're listening, Fabian, I'm calling you out. Write about Becky's implementation.
Whatever your name is.
Yeah, I was going to say about Ivan's presentation about what was it called, Time Zone, that requires 12 or 14 disk sides. He actually, in the chat later on, he said he has 14 floppy drives that he purchased for the purpose of doing it on real hardware.
Nice.
Wow. I want to see a picture of that.
Yeah, the problem is that those are like physically separated from him, where like he can't actually work on them right now, but the idea of building a floppy disk raid is just fomenting in my mind right now.
I can't imagine how much power.
Every slot gets a disk.
Yeah,
it's the only
seven
thing I need
slots,
for.
Two disks per slot.
Oh my gosh.
That's a lot.
You can do it.
Yeah, 12 disc sides plus a save. You get one spare.
Oh, no, no. I'd build a power supply just to put all the... And probably do it on duo discs instead of disc twos because they're more compact. But the the idea of powering them is the only thing that's really...
Yeah. I suppose it's still only accessing one at a time.
Exactly. Yeah.
True.
So then
right,
all
but
running.
The idea of having like a 2 or 3 megabyte ProDOS... volume separated physically across
14 disks, 2 megabytes.
It'd be Stripe or RAID 3 or RAID 1?
Stripe for performance.
Yeah, RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID.
I'd like to call out Alex's presentation on modern video solutions.
Yes, I was like, where were you last August when I was doing all of this?
And you would think that there's no more to say on that topic because, you know, we all talked to death about how to display video on modern devices with the Apple II. Frankly, some KVest is all I talk about with people. But it's always changing, and that's the problem. Like, the solutions that worked, like, I have things I've bought at KFest from 3 years ago that no longer work because they relied on VGA or they relied on some other thing that now I don't have anymore. So the problem keeps shifting over time. And so we do, frankly, need every couple of years this presentation again so we can all figure out how to plug in our current TVs or whatever. And you know, or like the Night Owl that we've all been using is no longer available. So as those die, we're all going to be stuck again. So his presentation was great, and he cost me $130. I bought one of those TVs that he recommended. I will say I spent more money on this KFest than I have in any previous one.
But think of all the money you saved traveling.
Yeah, but
yeah, I guess, honestly,
exactly.
Yeah.
You didn't have to travel. So
just sitting in front of Amazon and Kickstarter while people are talking, it's like, ooh, click. Yeah, so my...
Are you going to paint it to match your 2C?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of you and the 2C, a few years ago I got from you the Megabeat you made. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for it a while ago because I'm done all virtual, but I'm like, I hang on to those little bits because you never know when you're going to want like a thing if I go back to... I'm just like, where... I've lost it. I can't find it. Well, I found it during this Kansas Fest because right after I bought it from you, I tucked it into my little name holder.
Did you wear
bingo.
Man, nice.
One
nice.
So I stuck on my name badge to feel like I was at Kansas Fest, and tucked inside it is the Quinn Dunkey Megabeat. So
nice.
I'll just tuck it away and forget all about it again for another 4 years.
Paul, your talk on the solutions for the Apple III was very good, and I was very excited to hear that the booty will work in the Apple III because I've got an Apple III, and I've never actually gotten to get it to work, and I was never sure whether it was a floppy issue or what. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to giving that a try.
Yeah, that's been kind of neat.
I learned about the booty this year. I didn't know about it, and that's another good example of a topic you would think that we have run out of things to say about, virtual storage, but... again, it's a problem that keeps shifting. Like, can't get compact flashcards anymore, so those solutions are all dead. And even regular SD cards are getting harder to get. And the flash air thing went away. And
it's a cheap bit of kit.
Yeah. That's the surprising thing. It really doesn't cost very much once Chris ships it from Australia, at least.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
It's been definitely neat though to have to see the kind of the a little bit of three enthusiasm that this has brought. I mean, you know, maybe this is the year that the community builds.
Oh, I see it down there.
You talk about
the
Apple III, Paul. I learned something new about the Apple III, and it's like my knowledge of the Apple III is building and building and building. But each of the new things that I learn is another reason why I don't want anything to do with it. Yeah. I don't want anything to do with that. Because it won't run. It has to have drivers.
And it lost me at drivers. Yeah.
Yeah. You won't plug in like regular peripherals without having some, no. But then it's like, oh, there's something interesting that it can do now. But then all the other things, no.
Yeah.
Well, every time Paul talks about the Apple III, I come closer and closer. I'm going the other way to writing something for it because of the graphics. Every time you talk about the graphics modes, like all these colors and like sprites, like software fonts. And I'm like, this sounds great. Like, I want to write stuff for that. But previously the barrier has been emulation. There isn't any. So it sounds like that's basically solved now. Is that true?
I think so. Yeah. They're working hard to make it, you know, totally accurate. So MAME at least does a really good job.
Okay. I can't go back to developing on real hardware, so there has to be emulation for your platform or I won't touch it.
Right.
Yeah, they do try to emulate every chip, and that's why it's taking so damn long.
As a recent acquirer of two broken Apple IIe's, or Apple IIIs, sorry, I'm really looking forward to you know, what's coming down the pipe for Apple IIIs.
Well, speaking of hardware emulation, 8-Bit Workshop simulating Verilog, like that, he buried the lead on that. Like that, just my head exploded. Like the
Can you
possibilities.
Go into what Verilog is for those of us who are not.
Verilog, or a popular alternative is VHDL. It's a hardware description language, and basically, it's what modern hardware designers use for designing chips. It looks kind of C-like, but it's everything is happening simultaneously because it's hardware. So you have to be careful about looking at it like you would C. But basically, it's hardware description language, and you can use it to create FPGAs and other types of ICs. And so what he's doing with 8-Bit Workshop is you can put Verilog in it and simulate any hardware that doesn't exist yet. So if you're going to make an FPGA, or for example, I made my 8-bit computer Veronica, which got me to my first K-Fest, I could actually write an emulator for that in his development environment, which is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, I thought it just sort of mentioned it. I was like, wait. Did I hear you correctly?
So
I could just
whatever.
Like,
now it emulates
just do
everything
some chip
now.
Designs.
Yeah.
It emulates everything, yeah. Including things from the future.
Yeah, like as soon as you've got that, you've solved the problem.
Yeah, that went right over my head. Yeah, he said something about being able to emulate a peripheral before you actually build the peripheral, or and that, like I said, just went right over my head because I didn't understand. But now I'm gonna have to go back and watch the presentation again.
See, us old kids, we used knowledge. To use breadboards and circuits and wires, and now you just put it in a program and it does it.
Yeah, if you're going to develop an IC, you write it in something like Verilog or VHDL, and then you simulate it in something like SPICE, and you simulate at what they call the net level, where you're simulating how the signals are passing through the gates and through the flip-flops, and you simulate it that way, and then you can produce a prototype of the chip on an FPGA, and you can do your integration testing and so on, and then if that all works, you can go and you can make an ASIC out of it and so forth. So he's basically skipping all those steps, and he's going directly from Verilog to software environment. You know, he's skipping 30 layers of the stack, which is crazy. And it's in JavaScript, which the future is so weird and interesting.
If we're all quiet for a while, Quinn will have to do something.
I guess I'm going to MC this thing.
I figured out how we could make a ton of money, by the way, by combining sessions. You guys caught that, right? Because you had the Bitcoin session where at the end they said it'll take trillions of years to mine a Bitcoin. But then you had Steve 2 that speeds it up by a factor of 1,000. So, hey, you're
so
down
you
to billions of years. I you know.
Just billions.
Cha-ching.
You can write a Bitcoin miner in Verilog and simulate it in 8-Bit Workshop.
Yep. Step 4, profit.
I mean, that's probably how you would have to create a new ASIC anyway, right? So you just skip the actual making of the ASIC and emulate it.
Perfect. Everything is a software problem.
There's no problem in computer science that cannot be solved by another layer of indirection.
Exactly. Yes. And the three hardest problems in computer science are naming things and off by one errors.
Off by one. Off by one.
And or cache invalidation, depending on how you tell the joke. All right. So any other favorite sessions people want to call out?
No one's talked about the amateur radio one.
Oh, yeah. That was interesting.
That was something that, you know, it's a topic that I just don't think about. But I guess Earl thought about it a little bit.
Well, I did that back in the day. I had a terminal node controller and hooked it up to old 8-bit computers, and it was a ton of fun. I didn't know how much people were doing that today, especially with retro computers, but that would be really fun to get into. The other factor is how much activity is in your local area if you're using the frequencies that don't go hundreds or thousands of miles if you're just using the line of sight stuff. But still, it is a great presentation. And I did take a look at eBay, and you can find some of those terminal node controller, kind of like a radio modem, devices out there.
Do you also need a big antenna, like if you were doing ham or something like that?
The antenna that you need depends on a number of factors. One is the frequency range you're using. There's frequencies that go hundreds or thousands of miles and other frequencies that are more attuned for line of sight. If you're using the line of sight frequencies, VHF, UHF, you don't really need a gigantic antenna for those things. Having it way up in the air is helpful, but it doesn't need to be one of those enormous antennas that you see. Actually, even with the other frequencies, you can get away with a smaller antenna. It's just that you probably won't have as efficient of a radio experience.
Depending on your power, you can get into standing wave issues in the transmitter itself if it's shorter or longer than quarter wave and stuff like that, too, where it can burn up the radio. But if you're transmitting a couple watts, it's like, it doesn't really matter.
I think it is interesting to hear about these things just because this involves equipment that I'm not going to, that I will never own. It's sort of like MIDI talks. it's kind of a neat idea, but I'm not going to go buy a big synthesizer just so I can try this out.
On the equipment side, software-defined radio has really opened up a lot of this. Like, again, speaking of emulation and making everything a software problem, SDR has done a lot of that for amateur radio, where now you can kind of simulate a lot of the stuff that used to take a big stack of gear behind you.
Okay. So what it sounds like to me is Joe, Quinn, and Earl, you're starting a new podcast about amateur radio.
That they will broadcast from their radio station.
I could download it off of the air.
Yeah.
Over the air podcasts. Well, that's what the next big thing is.
I am not a ham.
You're not a ham? Quinn, I'm surprised at you.
I know many of them, but I am not one.
My radio experience ends at about Wi-Fi for local internet access as a fixed Wi-Fi or ISP solution. So you can talk about ham stuff, but...
Mm-hmm. And Quinn, you can't tell us you don't have time to do that because you put a new Blondie Hacks video up during Kansas Fest. So it's like, how do you have time to do that?
Well, that one was cued, but yeah, it's not easy, I will say.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, ham is one of those interesting things that dovetails very well with retro computing because they're kind of at the same technology level, mm-hmm. like in the same way that like Arduino stuff dovetails really well with retro computers because they're also kind of at the same technology level. And I think the only reason we don't hear more about it in retro computing circles is that ham people are kind of a pretty tight-knit group that don't tend to intersect a lot with other groups maybe, but there should be more of it.
One of the best places to get old retro computing hardware is at HamFest.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's true. I've heard that often.
Yeah, and I've gotten a lot of interesting stuff at we have a local swap meet here near where I live. There's a lot of interesting old computer stuff there and old oscilloscopes and test meters and just random weird electronics and things.
I miss being able to go to the school sales and get old equipment. Yeah, they all the old equipment's gone. It's newer old equipment, and I don't care about that.
Yeah, nobody wants
all the old equipment's gone because you took it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, you don't want all their old Windows 7 boxes?
Yeah, nobody wants a 2010 PC.
Yeah, once we hit Windows 95 and OS X, it's like, who cares?
Well, if there's a garage sale giveaway next year, then it'll have piled up an extra year's worth of stuff.
That's true.
That's true.
So it was going to be a big one this year. Which means it's going to be a big one, big one plus a little.
I know I've got stuff I was going to be bringing back. I got to play with it for a little while, and I'll bring it back for the next person.
So can someone on the committee talk about that a little bit? Like the garage giveaway has kind of changed into something else, right? Because it's no longer Sean Fahey's garage, right? So what is it now, and what can we expect next year from it?
I think Sean and James are no longer like trying to officially be in charge of it, but the reality is that they're still kind of the keepers of a lot of that stuff in the sense that, James has a lot of room for stuff and so does Sean. And so they've gotten, we actually did get a couple collections this past year that we were planning on bringing. Mm-hmm. And so that stuff is still there, but I think they would prefer to not be the ones who are, officially in charge anymore.
And I think that the community knows that they are the ones that you go to if you have like, hey, I've got this collection. They're now like cemented in people's minds as this is who takes care of this.
I think it still is, kind of an event though. Like if you have stuff that you want to unload, mm-hmm. you can presume that Kansas Fest is a place to do it.
It's so, always going to be there. It's just never, it might not be, it's not going to be like James rolls up with his giant truck and trailer, but I think there's always going to be that Wednesday morning or whatever, everybody goes and dives into this pit of stuff and comes out with new toys. Mm.
Yeah, so I think it sort of has to do with, I think the fact that we had a bunch of stuff this year just had to do with a specific collection becoming available and, saving it, and so that won't necessarily keep happening.
But if we do get like 100 new people next year, maybe we can finally get rid of all those like boxes and boxes of tangled cables.
Image writers.
Yeah, nobody's taking those or the image writers.
But we can maybe fool them.
Everybody should have at least
have
two
to.
Image writers,
right. Yeah.
Like, in your house.
That's right.
You never
it's
know.
It's a 10-quart limit. You come in, you got to take 10 quarts.
That's right. Everything you get must also be accompanied by an image writer.
And you don't get to pick which 10 quarts.
Yeah, we're just going to throw 10 quarts at you and call it a day.
It does seem, though, that like the giveaway will kind of evolve into just a swap meet of some sort.
Yeah, that's
right?
Basically, I think, what we've always figured on it being.
I hope it continues in some form, because I think it's a big draw for a lot of people, especially to their first K-Fest. They want an Apple II. And
Exhibit A, Exhibit A, Exhibit A.
Yeah, it was.
And then by your fifth or sixth, you're like, oh, I cannot take any more stuff.
Oh, I said that last year, and there's a G3 sitting here that... Which it looked so sad, and I took it.
Blue and white?
I took the blue and white.
I love the blue and white. Yeah.
I have the blue and white. And I have the adapters to stream with it, so I could theoretically stream off of it.
Yeah, there was that period in the Mac history where it was actually a little bit hard to get the video out.
Well, I have a VGA to HDMI converter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I had a lot of head. There was trouble getting it to VGA, though, in the first place.
But is it the
VGA.
Right 15 pins? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness,
It works. I've tested it. It works. So, that's set up and able to happen if I have too many things to stream and not enough time to stream them.
All right. Well, any other topics people want to cover before we wrap it up?
If you wrap it up and Kansas Fest is over, so I say we keep going.
No, I am dying, y'all.
I'm
going to
read the phone book over here. Aaron Aronson.
And the Discord audio chat is still available.
I was just about to say, the next thing I'm going to do is go into the audio chat and just like listen for a little while.
Yeah.
Because honestly, if it's a bunch of people kind of meandering through and saying, oh, hey, it was great to see you this year, whatever. It's like that sitting in the lobby as everyone's taking off to go to their cars.
Sunday morning. That Sunday morning is brutal.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon, though, is really weird when, it's just like a couple of committee members and in an empty dorm and it's all gone.
And one person with a suitcase whose flight was canceled. All right, well, this is a good place to wrap it up, not least because I've had to pee for 45 minutes.
You and me both.
Yeah. So this has been the Retro Open Poly Roundtable Chicken Missile Lines Drop Museum Grewcast live from Kansas Fest 2020 Virtual Edition. Thank you all very much to all of our guests, and we will see you next year for realsies in person. Woo-hoo. Bye, everybody.
Appleton forever.
Bye.
Appleton forever.
Appleton forever.
Retro. 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 Retro